Morning. It's great to be with you this morning. I appreciate your presence here so that we can study God's Word together. Several of you have asked about Dad. His surgery Friday to put in the feeding tube went well. Everything went as planned, and so he got to come home late Friday afternoon, and so appreciate your prayers on his behalf. As I had mentioned, he has already started back up chemo. He goes back this Wednesday for some type of follow-up deal, some type of medication that he's taking along with the chemo, and then it'll be two more weeks and he'll have another round of chemo. I think they're going to do several rounds and then at that point reevaluate and see if the chemotherapy is working. That way they know where to go from there. And so appreciate your prayers on his behalf. As was mentioned, there are flyers, postcards, business cards, all things pertaining to our gospel meeting. So that you can invite folks and encourage them to come and to be with us. Talked to Brother DeBerry about a week ago, and he's excited about coming, and I know that we're excited to have him coming. And so those are all on the podium out in the back, so please pick those up, make use of those, pass those out to folks, and invite them to come and be with us. One final thing, thank you to everyone who played a role in Vacation Bible School. That is a huge endeavor. It takes a lot of hands to make it work. We had a lot of people who were involved with that, and I appreciate each and every one of you, the job that you did. We had a great crowd this year. Our overall numbers were actually up a little bit from last year. And so the number of young people was about steady, maybe a few less than last year, but the number of adults was actually an increase from over last year. And so thank you to everyone who played a role in that. Appreciate your participation and your help. I was especially proud Tuesday night to see Matt get up and lead a prayer. Led the closing prayer. And by the way, Matt, when you did that, Stephen automatically said, hey, I hope he knows he's going down on the list now. So you're in the rotation now, whether you wanted to be or not. Last week, we talked about our influence. And we went to a passage in Matthew chapter 5, which of course is right there in the Sermon on the Mount. Right after Jesus had talked about the Beatitudes, those blessed attitudes that we possess, he shifts focus into talking about our influence. And last week we noticed about our being salt and noticed a lot of things concerning salt and how those things are true both of salt and of the Christian. And this morning I wanted us to continue that line of thought and continuing in the passage and wanted us to talk about being light. In Matthew chapter 5 in verses 14 through 16, Jesus goes on to say, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand. And it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." Jesus describes us here as a city on a hill, as a light on a lampstand. We sang the children's song, and we sang it during VBS, "This Little Light of Mine." And brethren, that's a good song with an important lesson. Because as Christians, we're to let our light shine for all to see. We're to let our light shine so that our Father can be glorified. You know, VBS is one of those times where you can see a lot of light shining. There were a lot of lights shining in this congregation. There were the lights of those who came up here and decorated their classrooms and other areas of the building. There were lights shining as teachers went in and taught young people the lessons. There were lights shining as crafts were being done, as drinks and cookies were being passed out. There were lights shining all around this building, brethren. And as Christians, that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be that light. And that's what God calls us to be. As we think about this passage of Scripture, 3 points that I want us to notice. Just like last week, we'll notice the first point and many of the sub-points this morning, and then we will notice the conclusion of the lesson this evening. Number one, we want to begin by noticing a picture to fit. A picture to fit. Jesus says you are the light of the world. Brethren, this is a very important description when you consider the fact that the whole world lies in darkness. In John chapter 3, in verses 19 through 21, Jesus said, "And this is the condemnation, that the light come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil." You think about crime. When are most crimes committed? They're committed at night, right? They're committed under that cover of darkness. In verse 20 of John 3, "For everyone practicing evil hates the light and does not come to the light, lest his deeds should be exposed. But he who does the truth comes to the light, that his deeds may be clearly seen, that they have been done in God." Jesus said the world is in darkness. The world is in darkness of sin, the darkness of religious error, the darkness of ignorance. And brethren, without light to guide them out, they are headed for an eternal darkness. But God has called us to be that light. And as we think about that idea, I want us to notice 10 characteristics of light that are applicable to the Christian as well. We're going to notice 8 of those this morning. Number 1, light reveals and illuminates. Light reveals and illuminates. In Luke chapter 15, we have Jesus teaching a series of parables on some things that were lost. You remember that there was one sheep that was lost. There was one coin that was lost. And there was one son that was lost. Just as an interesting side note, if you look at those stories in reverse, you see something interesting about our God. First off, you've got a lost son, right? Well, how many sons did the father had? He had 2, right? So if you look at that as a percentage, 50% of his children were lost. And of course, he sought for that one son. He ran out to meet him when he came home. You go to the next parable, going backwards in the text, and you have the woman that we're going to notice in a moment who had 10 coins and she lost one. Well, once again, as a percentage, that's 10%, right? That's still a pretty good percentage. You look at those two. If you had $100 and you lost $50, you're going to go and search for that $50, right? If you had $100 and you lost $10, you're probably going to go in search of those $10. But then you go one more step into the parable and you have a man who had 100 sheep. And one of those sheep went astray and he still had 99 there, right? You know, if you had $100 and you lost $1, it might not bother you too much, right? I mean, I still got 99. But that shepherd went in search of that one sheep, didn't he? As you look backwards through that parable, you see that no matter how many were safe, God was concerned still with the one that was lost. And as we look at the woman who lost the coin, she's searching diligently for it. But notice what she does in Luke 15:8. "Or what woman having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it?" What did she do? She lit a light. Why? Because it would help her find it. This applies to the ladies more so than the men. You ever lost the backs of one of your earrings? I know Micah has before, and we get down in the bedroom on the carpet, we turn the lights on, our flashlights on our phones, and we're shining it and looking. Why? Because at some point, normally that light will catch it, right? And while you might not have seen it with your naked eye, that light illuminates it, and hey, right there it is. In Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 13, Paul writes, "But all things that are exposed are made manifest by the light." What do you do when a storm knocks out the power at your house? Start looking for a flashlight, right? Flashlight, candles, lantern, something in order to light things up. There was a blind man who lived in a village back in the 1700s. And this blind man at night, when he would walk somewhere, he would carry a lighted lantern everywhere he went. And one day someone came up to him and asked him, Why in the world do you carry a lighted lantern? You're blind. And he said, I carry it to keep others from stumbling over me. We should live our lives in such a way that we are a help, not a hindrance. Our life should light the straight and narrow way so that others might be able to find it. Number one, light and the Christian reveal and illuminate. Number three, light banishes darkness. Light banishes darkness. When Christians are present, the darkness of sin should be banished by our influence. Let's say this morning that we completely darken the auditorium. We put paper over the windows here and over the windows in the back, and we shut all of the lights out, and it was pitch black. And we all got our phones out, or for those who don't have a smartphone, you brought a flashlight with you, and we all turned those lights on. What happens to the darkness in the area where that light shines? It's gone, right? Light and darkness, they can't exist in the same space. Because where light shines, darkness is eliminated. That's why God calls for us to be a light, so that we can banish the darkness of sin. Thirdly, this morning, light warms, comforts, and cheers. You've probably heard, and you might have heard it by different names, but seasonal affective disorder is the clinical name for it. Now, sometimes we refer to it as winter depression. It's a disorder that some people suffer from, and it occurs during the winter months. And the reason it occurs during the winter months is because the hours of sunlight during those months is much shorter. Right now, we've got plenty of hours of sunlight, and it's heating up the world just fine at the moment here in Ripley, Tennessee. But as those hours grow shorter that we have the sun, it can affect the mood and the mental health of individuals. As Christians, we should be a source of comfort to those around us. It should be that we provide warmth. We should be those who, as Paul said, weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice. I was talking to an individual that I met at Alan Shekel's funeral yesterday. His name was Mark, which was easy for me to remember because that's my dad's name. Mark was a very close friend to Alan and Tara. He and his wife and stood by them throughout this whole journey that they've been on. And Mark and I were talking after the funeral out in the foyer. And I said, you know, that I said, I don't know all the family, but I know that this is a close-knit family, that, and I'm glad that she has such a strong support group around her during a time like this. And he made the statement, he said, you know, I don't understand how people do things like this without that. And I don't know how you do. I don't know how you deal with the problems of life without a group of people around you to help you through them. And that's what we are as Christians. We're there for one another. We support one another. We prop one another up. Just as light warms, comforts, and cheers, as Christians, we should as well. That brings us to our fourth thing. And that is the fact that light guides. Light guides. In Exodus chapter 13 and verse 21, we have the children of Israel, they have left the land of Egypt. And you recall that God's going before them, He's leading them. And in verse 21 of Exodus 13, and the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so as to go by day and night. Look, at night, God used the light of fire to guide them, to show them the direction that they needed to go. In Matthew chapter 2 and verse 9, now when they heard the king, and this is the wise men, they departed, and behold, the star which they had seen in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. How did the wise men know where to go? Well, they followed the light from the star. Again, God leading them by light. And brethren, God leads us by light today, the light of His Word. Psalm 119, verse 105, the psalmist says, "Your Word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my pathway." Brethren, when we try to travel through this life without God's Word, we're traveling blindly. We need His Word to light the way. We sing the song sometimes, "Let the lower lights be burning. Send a gleam across the way." Those lower lights of the lighthouse, they allowed the ship to know where the center part of the bay was. That way the ship knew if it followed in on those lower lights, then it would be safe from the rocks and the dangers that were around the shoreline. That was the whole purpose of those lower lights, to guide that ship in the harbor. The question that we need to ask, where is our influence guiding people? Is it guiding them to safety or to destruction? Brother, that's a question we have to ask ourselves, because there are people that are watching our example. There are people that are looking to us. There are people that look at you, and to them, what you are is what a Christian is. What are they seeing? Where are we leading them? Let's make sure that we're living lives that guide people in the right direction, that our light guides them to safety. Number five, light warns of dangers. Light warns of dangers. The blinking yellow light, the lighthouse, the lights of police cars, ambulances, fire trucks, and the Christian. What do all those things have in common? They're things that warn of danger. As Christians, you and I have the responsibility to warn others of sin. In fact, the Bible tells us that if we don't warn others, we may be guilty of not doing that. In the Old Testament, in Ezekiel chapter 3, God talks to Ezekiel about what we refer to many times as the watchman principle. You know, in biblical times, there was a watchman who sat on the wall, right? And he scanned the horizon for danger. And if danger approached, it was the watchman's job to sound the warning. And if the watchman didn't sound the warning, well, then the blood of those individuals who died because of that danger was on his hands. Well, in Ezekiel 3, God makes a spiritual application of that to Ezekiel. In verses 17 through 19, he says, "Son of man, I have made you a watchman for the house of Israel. Therefore, hear a word from my mouth and give them warning from me. When I say to the wicked, 'You shall surely die,' and you give him no warning, nor speak to warn the wicked from his wicked way to save his life, that same wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood I will require at your hand." Notice what God tells Ezekiel. If I tell you to warn them and you don't warn them, that individual is still going to die in his sin. But I'm going to require his blood at your hand, Ezekiel, because you didn't tell him what he needed to be told. "Yet if you warn the wicked and he does not turn from his wickedness, nor from his wicked way, he shall die in his iniquity, but you have delivered your soul." God then tells Ezekiel, hey, if you warn him, it's not on you whether or not they heed the warning or not. It's not your job to make them obey, but it's your job to tell them what they need to know. That principle is also found in the New Testament. In Acts chapter 20, in verses 26 and 27, Paul is speaking to the elders at Ephesus. And he tells them, "Therefore I testify to you this day that I am innocent of the blood of all men." Why is that, Paul? "For I have not shunned to declare to you the whole counsel of God." Paul says, I've told you everything that you needed to hear. I've told you everything that God told me to tell you. You've probably heard the song before, "You Never Mentioned Him to Me." The chorus reads, "You never mentioned him to me. You helped me not the way to see. You met me day by day and knew I was astray, yet never mentioned him to me." Brethren, I don't want on the day of judgment anyone to be able to utter those words to me. I don't want anyone to be able to utter those words to you. Jesus instructed us to teach others the gospel. Let's make sure that we do our part to warn others of sin and to tell them about salvation. Number 6, light awakens. Light awakens. Most people have blinds or curtains in their rooms, right? Why do we have those? Well, because we want to block out the light. Because light can wake us up when we're asleep. When I went to preaching school in Memphis, for the first month or two while I was there during the summer school, I slept in the living room of my apartment. I slept in there a lot because I didn't have money yet to buy curtains or a curtain rod. The reason was there was a street light right outside my bedroom window. And I couldn't sleep in there because it was too bright. Light awakens. And as Christians, we should awaken. We should inspire others to be faithful. We should be encouragers of those who are striving to live right. In Hebrews chapter 10 and verses 24 and 25, the Hebrew writer says, "And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works." So oftentimes we jump to verse 25, and I understand the need to look at verse 25 because it talks about not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. In other words, we need to be here together. But so oftentimes we jump to verse 25, we skip over verse 24, which talks about one of the reasons we come together. And that's because we're wanting to stir up love and good works among each other. We're wanting to encourage each other to keep on striving to live faithfully, to keep doing what's right. Because the world will do everything that it possibly can, brethren, to discourage you from doing that. Satan's going to make sure that there are as many roadblocks as possible in your way as you try to travel down that straight and narrow. And so we need each other to help each other, to encourage one another, to say, keep going, don't give up, you can do it. As Christians, we should awaken each other. The Hebrew writer says we're to consider one another, to watch out for each other's spiritual welfare. The verb here in the Greek denotes attentive, continuous action. All right, this isn't a one-time thing. This is something that we do continually. He explains to us that that's part of the reason that we gather together, to exhort, to encourage one another. The word exhort means to build up. As Christians, we're to build each other up, not tear each other down. Paul talked about the need to keep each other awake to the spiritual necessities of life. We noticed the verse in Ephesians 5:13 earlier about all things are exposed by light. But as you continue on in verses 14 and 15, he says, "Therefore," he says, "awake you who sleep." Now, is he talking about people who are literally sleeping? Hey, it's time to get up. Is he being an alarm clock? No, that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about those who are spiritually asleep, who are not paying attention to the dangers and the things that are going on around them. He says, "Arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise." Paul's a Christian writing to other Christians telling them, hey, Wake up. And we need to be people who do the same. Light awakens, and the child of God should be an encourager of others. Number 7. Light shines for the benefit of others. Light shines for the benefit of others. You know, light is different from a lot of other elements or aspects of our world. And what makes light different from almost anything else is that it only has one purpose. And that is to benefit others. Nothing that light does comes back to benefit the source. You know, there are a lot of things that we do, and we do those things because they have benefits to us, right? But light, nothing that it does benefits the source. Instead, it takes away from the source and travels forward, giving light and energy to everything it comes in contact with. When I turn a light on in the house, it doesn't just benefit me, right? But it benefits everyone that's in the house. The lights that are on right now, they're not just benefiting a few of us. We all benefit from that. When the sun shines, it doesn't just benefit one person, but everybody. Christians are to benefit those around them. John Maxwell, he's a well-known author. In his book, Developing the Leader Within You, he tells the story of a lighthouse worker and his oil. He says a lighthouse worker who worked on a rocky stretch of coastline received his new supply of oil once a month to keep the light burning. Not being far from shore, he had frequent guests. One night, a woman from the village begged some oil to keep her family warm. Another time, a father asked for some to use in his lamp. Another needed some to lubricate a wheel. Since all the requests seemed legitimate, the lighthouse keeper tried to please everyone and grant the request of all. Toward the end of the month, he noticed the supply of oil was getting low. And very soon it was gone. And the beacon went out. That night, several ships were wrecked and lives were lost. When the authorities investigated, the man was repentant. He explained to them what had happened. And to his excuses and pleading, this was their reply. You were given oil for one purpose, to keep the light burning. Christians, we've been given life for one purpose, to shine for others to see, so that they may glorify God. We live our lives for Christ, and by doing so, we serve those around us. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Brethren, let's be light. Is your light shining this morning? Maybe you need to turn that light on for the very first time by becoming a Christian. By believing in Jesus and turning from sin, being immersed in water for the forgiveness of your sins. Maybe you've done that, you are a Christian, but you realize this morning, you know what? My light's gone out. Here's the great thing about God. He stands ready to light it again. All we have to do is turn back to Him, and He stands with open arms ready to receive us. Brethren, let's let our light shine, so that people in Ripley, in Lauderdale County, in Tennessee, in this world, will see God, will see Christ, living in us. You need to respond to heaven's invitation. We ask you to come right now as we stand and sing.